You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
Welcome to Pod for Ham, and in this episode, we will be discussing Helpless. I'm Rachel Donner.
I'm Elsa S. Henry.
Michael B. Johnson.
And I'm Brian Hamilton. No relation.
I was just going to ask you.
Nope. I thought it was very flattering someone would write a musical about me, but it turns out, nope, not happening.
Alas.
So Helpless is where we meet the ladies of the show.
Right, in a much more meaningful way than their introduction song. We really do get to know them in this song.
So part of the thing that I found fascinating about this, and again, I'm not a student of the form. I think you guys probably have better terms to describe these things, but I found it fascinating. I made the mistake one day of having the album on in my car, and it was on essentially shuffle, but it was dropping me in the middle of it, and I was thinking I was listening to one song. I'd only heard it, heard the album a few times, and these various songs, you know, the sort of Rashomon element of when they met, and that sort of being recounted back several times through the show. I found that fascinating, especially because you think you're in one song and then you're in another. That was great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, David Lore has mentioned this a lot, where essentially the whole show is a flashback, given the fact that the very first song, Alexander Hamilton, is like, we're about to tell you this story, we on this stage, like the whole thing is essentially a flashback. So when they do it again inside a whole nother song in Helpless, then it makes a lot of sense to be like going in and then in Satisfied going back again from a completely different perspective.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
This song is definitely paired up with Satisfied. Like, it's very hard to talk about them separately because they are, in fact, the same exact occurrence, just told from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I guess we'll do our best to stick with Helpless as much as I do think Satisfied is the best song in the entire show, but we'll stick with Helpless as much as we possibly can.
That is
can,
a bold
maybe.
Choice.
Yeah,
bold choice.
The room where it happens. Sorry. Sorry.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I have to go with Nonstop.
Rachel?
Wait for it.
See, we all have different favorite songs. That's what I love about this show.
Although One Last Time has a special place in my heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually getting a line from Hurricane tattooed on my arm.
Wow.
What line?
I wrote my way to revolution.
Oh, my God. That is incredible.
That's commitment.
I'm a writer, so it fits.
The Schuyler Sisters song where they introduced the three Schuyler Sisters, even though in reality there was like 15, there was 9 or something, right?
There were 9 of them, yes.
Nine. A lot of people compare that to Beyoncé, and we get a lot more of that pop sensibility in Helpless, where we focus on Eliza and just her relationship with Hamilton, but it's very much in a similar musical style, albeit.
I think it's more Destiny's Child than Beyoncé. Or
yeah.
My personal feeling is it's on Vogue.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of My Lovin', I think.
Oh, I'd never thought of that comparison before.
I actually have all those albums.
Yeah, and maybe a little TLC thrown in.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one for me because it's just so straightforwardly fun to listen to. Although, again, there is a fair amount of storytelling going on with the, essentially the proposal. And I thought that was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Or the retelling of the proposal, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny because I live in Morristown, which is where this basically takes place historically. And I actually volunteer at the Schuyler Hamilton House, which is in downtown Morristown. It's owned by the DAR.
That's amazing.
And it's, as far as we know, it's the house where they actually got engaged, but it's where Elizabeth Schuyler was living during the winter of their courtship. So it's been interesting because we now have a lot of people coming into the house wanting to hear about Hamilton. And I'm like, well, Alexander Hamilton was never here. He was down the road at Ford's Mansion. It's possible that their engagement took place here, but we're not really sure.
On the subject of brief tangent, on the subject of people visiting, you know, actual real life places, I visited Trinity Church yesterday and visited Alex and Eliza's grave. And I thought, you know, I was concerned I was being disrespectful by taking a picture of it and putting on Twitter. But immediately when I left, a whole group of 15, 16-year-old kids went and were taking selfies and like, oh, my God, this is them. It's amazing. Like, it was a lot.
I have to say, as a historian and as a dramaturg, watching young teenagers getting this excited about history makes me tear up a little bit.
Yeah.
I see on Twitter all the time people much younger than I am getting excited about the Revolutionary War now. I'm like, I mean, that's when I got into history, but I was always a nerd.
Now the cool kids are nerds too.
Exactly. So it's nice.
Yeah. And the other part of this that's interesting to me is the fact of, you know, the whole helpless element to this, which, you know, she's not. and again, kind of going back to my thinking about the story the first few times that I listened to it before I had complete context, I really thought when he betrays her later on and she basically says, you know, I'm writing myself out of history or, you know, something to that effect, I'm writing myself out of the story. It was this sort of interesting thing because I didn't initially realize how much she came back and then, you know, lived for what, 50 years longer than him or something, mm-hmm. and did all these things and was really this amazing person. But anyway, I thought the she's not actually helpless part of it was interesting because it sort of sets it up in a way you're like, oh, okay, well, this is, you know, she's the subservient wife in this context here and this is how it's going to go forward. And then she gets cheated on and she's just like, I'm going to have nothing to do with you. And so, oh, maybe that's why we don't know about her. And this is kind of, and you're like, oh no, actually there's a lot about her. And was a very interesting, interesting historical figure herself and did a lot of really amazing things. So
no, agreed. I mean, in the Schuyler sisters song, they were talking about how, you know, they are very forward thinking. They are very proactive in all the things that they do. They're going to compel him to include women in the sequel work and stuff like that. And the fact that it goes from that to helpless seems like a bit of a regression in terms of, you know, they are very strong people. You're right, she is not helpless. And every time I listen to both this song and Satisfied, which again are two amazing songs, I get a little bit of like Neil Breen syndrome where I see a guy writing songs for women to fall in love with him. And I don't know, it's always been something that bugged me about these two songs.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, yes, they're strong women. And they're strong women in part because their mother was incredible. She went and set the family's fields aflame when the British were going to go take their grain. So they got it from somewhere, and it was their mother. But in the era, a woman's place wasn't what it's expected to be. That's something that's really interesting to me as a historian, is that women were expected to be sort of the moral compass of the home, but that doesn't mean what it does in the Victorian era. This is not angel of the household type stuff. This is very staunch. You need to know how to defend your home. You need to know how to take care of it if your husband dies in the war. So they're actually not helpless and they're not expected to be, which I find a really interesting choice, again, given the song.
Well, and all the machinations that are happening here are driven by the women.
Yes, absolutely.
Both in here and Satisfied. So it really does show that pretty clearly in this song.
Yeah, no, that's true.
They're a girl in the world in which their only job is to marry rich. There you go.
One of the other interesting things that I thought about listening to this song is that from a Broadway perspective is that you have Eliza telling the story here and with Angelica obviously is there as well, but it kind of made me think of Little Shop of Horrors. and, you know, the three doo-wop girls.
Yeah, I totally get it.
They are the great Greek chorus and storytellers of that show. And you have sort of a similar function here of Angelica and Eliza for the most part. I mean, there's, you know, and Peggy, but really it's just primarily Angelica and Eliza, and they are the storytellers. And then, you know, Eliza becomes the storyteller of Alexander Hamilton's life. And I just felt like the parallel between those two shows and that convention was really strong.
Well, and the other thing with this, right, is the fact that there's no, you know, it's not really a Rashomon thing in the sense of, like, you can come to these different conclusions from each of these stories. These are more interlocking versions of it, because yes. Eliza's very specifically saying, like, that guy's mine. And then her sister, who she thinks of as kind of superior to her, goes over to the guy and she's kind of like, all right, now I lost him. And but then her sister basically brings this guy right over and sets her up. And again, later on, of where Angelica basically looks, you know, tells this, when she's telling the story, she looks at her sister and she's like, oh, she wants him. Let me go take care of this. And so anyway, I think that's an interesting, it's reinforcing the argument that, that, you know, Hamilton and his sister and his sister, his wife and his sister-in-law had this kind of very strong relationship, and it gets strained at various times, but it's not some weird sleeping with his sister-in-law thing. It's really just his sister-in-law loved his wife so much and set them up, and she had enormous affection for him too. And this was not, I don't know. It works really well, I think, in the sense of, like, you might have missed something from one song and you'll hear it again. It'll be reinforced in the other one. And then you'll go back and be like, oh, no, they were actually saying that. Oh, that's true. Okay, good.
To the point where they actually repeat the dialogue twice.
Yeah. I do want to mention the there's on the Genius annotation, and this is also just through research, the line, I'm just saying if you really love me, you would share him. That does actually come from a letter.
Oh, my God, really?
The letter is basically Angelica told Elizabeth that she loved Hamilton, and this is the quote, very much, and if you were as generous as the old Romans, you would lend him to me for a little while.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was just a clever rhyme for harem.
No.
Well, I think the show, I mean, you know, I don't think they really talk in the show about Angelica's relationship with Jefferson, but she was totally... they were in exactly the same circles in France.
Yes, they were.
And she had a similar complicated relationship with Jefferson as well. So that woman was, she deserves her own whole musical.
She really does.
That's the sequel they're talking about, right? Where the women get included.
Work.
Can we just have the musical Work?
Yes.
I think we also need to talk about the, if it takes fighting a war for us to meet, it will have been worth it line. I mean, how cheeseball awesome is that?
Oh, but it's also just so devastating.
Yes.
Well, this is a man who said he wanted a war so he could get ahead. So, you know, it's a multi-purpose thing for him.
There are certain check marks on the list of things that Alexander Hamilton needs to rise up.
I guess.
One of them.
I'll let that one go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One other thing I remember, again, from the book was the whole, and this is not what he's talking about, but I thought it was interesting, the whole Peggy confides in me, Angelica tries to take a bite of me, the whole Peggy confides in me, because Peggy passed away pretty early in life. She passed away, I think, before Hamilton did.
And, yeah, I can look it up exactly when, but...
Yeah, and it was, I just seem to remember in the book it being this kind of very... sad thing, but that Hamilton was around for. But I could be wrong about that. But I do love, even though she, from my perspective, seems to have about three lines in the musical. I'm sure that's not true. If I see it live, I'm sure I'll see the actress singing more than that. But that whole "and Peggy" when they're in the Schuyler sisters song was pretty funny to me.
Well, I mean, it's also true. Apparently, she was sort of the one who was always trying to keep up with the sisters, because there were three of them that were sort of in the same contemporary circles. I think there might have been two others that were within their same peerage, but she was the one who was always kind of popping up to try and catch up with her sisters.
That was pretty funny in the...
Absolutely.
It made me laugh in the song.
Keeping up with the Schuylers. Make it happen, TV.
Eliza's younger sister, Peggy, I've been gravely ill for 2 years. Yeah, that was what I was thinking.
Yep.
And so then 1801, Hamilton was waylaid in Albany. Peggy's health deteriorated, and he visited her bedside often and kept Eliza posted on developments. So Hamilton had to send Eliza a somber note. On Saturday, my dear Eliza, your sister took leave of her sufferings and friends, I trust, to find repose and happiness in a better country. I long to come and console you, my darling Betsy. Adieu, my sweet angel. And so that was, 1801 was when she passed away.
Mm-hmm. Another little internet thing. I was going to Google You Punched the Bursar from a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I had in You Punched, and the first thing was You Punched the Bursar that auto-completed too. So the internet has really latched onto Hamilton.
Wow.
The internet really has latched onto Hamilton. I definitely have been finding it interesting to see what things go viral. For example, the West Wing for Ham.
Oh, no.
Wait, what?
Yes, somebody has been mashing up the West Wing and Hamilton. It's beautiful.
My daughter's obsessed with West Wing, so I'll have to let her know.
One of the other cool references or little nods to pop culture in there with the whole The Boy Is Mine thing, because I loved that Brandy and Monica song so much that when I heard that for the first time, I just like kind of leapt out of my seat and I was like, yay, he put it in there.
Anyone have anything else on Helpless?
No, I think it's a lovely, it's a great song. It's one of my favorites, but I think we've kind of covered everything I can think of.
Yeah, and the staging for it is pretty complex, I would say, in terms of all of the little stuff going on in the background with this party that they're supposedly at, and which sort of comes to fruition in Satisfied, where they have to rewind it and replay it. So just watching it in Helpless, you don't really notice as much of that going on until they rewind it in Satisfied. But this kind of sets the stage for that really nicely.
Especially when, even though they're so similar, they're about the same things, both Helpless and Satisfied, the music and the lyric styles are so different. Especially, Satisfied has, I think, the best raps in the show, too. They're just so fast, and she does an amazing, amazing job with Satisfied. And, both Helpless and Satisfied could have been very, boring, typical Broadway I Want songs, and Lin-Manuel Miranda gives the people in the show something totally different to do, which I think is fantastic.
And it's so fantastic that we have this song, which highlights Eliza, and then Satisfied, which highlights Angelica, and that they're both strong, whole, full female characters.
Yeah, it's very rare that we get to have such strong female characters in shows like this who have their own songs, and they really do. It's not just mimicry of one or the other.
Yeah, and without them being caricatures.
Absolutely.
There's the two women leads in Guys and Dolls, but they're pretty cardboard, right?
Yeah.
Compared to this, for sure. But
even in Les Mis, the other show on what I'm like to calling the revolutionary block now, since they're right next door to each other.
They are right next door.
Even in Les Mis, it's very 18th century literature, 19th century literature rather. So it's all the high narratives of womanhood, and we don't really get a sense of personhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is a little more nuanced. Rent school of musical theater.
Definitely.
Especially that Miranda was able to kind of salvage these two amazing characters from a very, very male-dominated society, 300 years ago.
Well, that was actually my major concern when I got sort of turned onto the show. I was like, are there any female characters worth talking about? Because in the revolutionary era, when it comes to the history of it, not necessarily during the actual time period, but people tend to not cover the women. And so I was concerned that the historical background that he got wasn't going to be fulfilling for women. But that I was fortunately quite wrong about that.
All right. Do we have anything else on Helpless?
I think we're done.
Fantastic. Tune in next week. We've been talking about Satisfied this entire time almost. But tune in next week for a big dive on Satisfied.
good.